Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the NFL season kicks off this weekend, and so does Responsible Gaming Education Month. With Americans expected to wager more money than ever this year, a reminder about gambling responsibly. Also this morning in our community and business spotlight, the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce and Findlay Young Professionals are hosting a touchdown tailgate event for the whole community tomorrow. We'll get details. It's not the start they were hoping for, but the Findlay Trojans will try and get their first win of the year tonight. We'll get a preview of all of the area high school action and another collection of yummy recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, September 6th, 2024. It seems like it should be a bigger deal. We should make a bigger deal out of the fact that it is the 250th day of the year. That just seems like a milestone of some kind that we should make a bigger deal about. It should celebrate or something. I don't know. Anyway, it just seems like that should be a bigger deal. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. If you are looking for something to do this weekend, the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Cathedral in Toledo is playing host to the 52nd annual Greek American Festival downtown in the Glass City. And live entertainment, authentic Greek food and pastries, and a full celebration of Greek culture runs today, tomorrow, and Sunday. You can get more information at ToledoGreekFest.com. Meanwhile, if you're up for a little longer drive, the Oktoberfest Cleveland Oktoberfest, continues this weekend. Our Oktoberfest celebration is coming up later this month, but if you can't wait and head to Cleveland through this weekend, it's the Cuyahoga County Fairgrounds. Live music and adult beverages will be on tap. Let's see here. Today and tomorrow, the final days for the 2024 Cleveland Oktoberfest, which, by the way, has been voted, I'm told, as the country's top Oktoberfest in a USA Today Reader Choice survey. So if you haven't been, apparently you're missing out. And you can get more details on that at Cleveland-October with a K. Dashfest.com. Clevelandoktoberfest.com. So there you go. A couple of other items here, kind of Ohio related, which I thought were interesting to start off this morning. A new report shows the Buckeye State is the third highest, has the third highest unsolved violent crime rate in the nation. Now, that's not a list you want to be at or near the top of, but here we are. Researchers for the Council of State Governments Justice Center looked at violent crime, homicides, aggravated assaults, robberies, and rapes reported in 2022 in every state. And of those incidents that police responded to in Ohio, 71% of them, 71, nearly 3 in 4, were left unsolved as of 1 year later. So they looked at the crimes from 2022 and then looked at those same crimes a year later, and nearly three quarters were remained unsolved. The Columbus Division of Police fared worse than the statewide average, even with 85% of those crimes unsolved. 85% unsolved in Columbus. That is just amazing when you think about it. Those are really alarming numbers. Perhaps this is a little better news for Ohio. Data from resume.io, it's a job seeking website platform. They crunched the numbers to find where in America is the easiest place to get a job. Now, they say the least competitive job market nationwide is in Jacksonville, Florida, where the average job posting receives just under 11 applications within 1 week's time. So they look at, I think they used Indeed job postings, the online platform Indeed. And then they looked at the number of applications each of those postings received within the first week. In Jacksonville, Florida, you had 11 applicants for every open job on average. San Antonio and Columbus. Columbus, Ohio came in second and third place in terms of the least competitive job market, meaning that if you're looking for a job, you should have a pretty good chance of landing one in Columbus, third least competitive job market in the nation, because you won't be fighting with quite as many other people for those jobs. So very high unsolved crime rate, but you can find a job in Columbus. The hardest place to find a job is San Jose, California, where one job ad receives on average 153 applicants. So a much tougher battle for open positions in San Jose. Dallas, Houston, Fort Worth, and Austin are all in the top 10 most competitive cities. So Texas, very difficult to get a job. Overall, Ohio attracts 17.18 applicants for each job within a week of being posted, making our state slightly more competitive than average, but not bad. It was right in the middle, actually. So. And a couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. 83%, speaking of jobs, 83% of frontline workers. That was kind of a term that we became very familiar with during the pandemic. Frontline workers, meaning those in like retail, food service, fitness, hospitality industries, those front-facing jobs where people interact with the public a great deal, 83% of those frontline workers feel overwhelmed by the information needed to do their jobs. This is a poll of 1,000 frontline workers by Wisetail, found that about 75% struggle to stay up to date with all the information that they need. And if you've got somebody who's interfacing with the public, interfacing with customers, you want them to have the most information, most accurate information to share with those customers and potential customers. And this is a problem for many of these workers. They say it is easy to learn new skills, but it is hard to keep up with all the information. Keep that in their head. 86% believe that their fellow coworkers are the most helpful resource, despite in-person or even online training. Fellow coworkers, the most reliable and most helpful resource for those, which I thought was kind of interesting. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, if you want to live longer, and who doesn't? We all want to live as long as possible, right? If you want to live longer, you better get mentally tough. Not talking physically tough, mentally tough. This is a decades-long study from Sun Yat-sen University in China, just published in the journal BMJ Mental Health. Scientists say the key to a longer life is how psychologically resilient a person is. In fact, they say being able to weather life's problems can greatly cut your risk of dying at a younger age, even if you are not a physically fit person. Physical fitness, less of a factor than mental fitness, according to this research. For the most resilient folks, the reduction in early mortality was as high as 53%. You can cut your risk of dying early in half if you are mentally resilient. Now, some information on the way they did this study. For more than 11 years, scientists tracked the health of 10,000 Americans age 50 or older who participated in the Health and Retirement Study, which ran from 2006 through 2008. So they had this study from 2006 to 2008. Then they followed up and tracked these individuals for 11 more years. And the researchers found that those who had psychological resilience, the ability to cope with and adapt to challenging life circumstances and events, had a reduced risk of dying from anything. And that is even after they adjusted for age, race, gender, body mass index, all of that. Even for those who had health conditions like diabetes or were out of shape, or even for individuals who had smoked, the reduction in early mortality for those who are psychologically resilient was noted. Mentally tough people handled stress well, tended to have a positive outlook on life. They also had a sense of purpose that others did not. While it is not exactly known why such an outcome was found, the researchers say they believe dealing with stress was the biggest factor, and those who don't handle it well can see their blood pressure rise and the corresponding increase of heart problems. So, even if you are a glass half empty type naturally, you can learn to boost your mental resilience through meditation and mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapy, and even starting a gratitude journal. And the scientists say their findings prove that teaching people to be mentally tough, mentally resilient, is a worthwhile prescription for a healthy life. I know that's a really long story, a lot of details there, but it is noteworthy. So I think that is maybe the biggest takeaway today. If you take nothing else away from this show today, let that be the lesson that you take away. Become more mentally resilient, more glass half full kind of mindset. You adopt that mindset, you are much more likely to live longer. Amen to that. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today, a chance of showers and storms, a high in the middle 70s. Partly cloudy tonight, low around 50. An 18-year-old has been indicted by a Hancock County grand jury in connection with a fatal shooting in Findlay in May. Court records show Peyton Howard is facing charges of voluntary manslaughter and involuntary manslaughter, both first-degree felonies, as well as charges of having a weapon against a court order and tampering with evidence. On May 26, the Findlay Police Department received a call that a male had been shot in an alley off of the 100 block of Howard Street. The male, 18-year-old Javion Zimmerman of Port Clinton, was taken to Blanchard Valley Hospital, where he died. Howard was 17 at the time of the alleged shooting, and his case was recently bound over from juvenile court to Hancock County Common Pleas Court, and he was indicted. Get more in the story on our website. Drivers are being reminded to obey all laws involving school buses as new data is released showing just how many school bus crashes have happened in the past 5 years in Ohio.
There have been more than 6,000 crashes since 2019, with the most taking place in Franklin County. Five counties, including Franklin, accounted for 47% of those crashes. Troopers have also given out nearly 16,000 tickets to drivers who pass a stopped school bus or other school zone violations.
ONN's Doug Petcash reporting. The Hancock Historical Museum's Historic Barn Tour is on Saturday. Museum Director Sarah Foltz on with WFIN's Chris Oak says each barn has its own unique story.
We are just so proud to be able to feature these. These families take so much pride. They put so much labor. It's really a labor of love into these structures. And we do have an impressive number of barns that are well preserved in our area. So we take this opportunity to highlight them, and then we pair it with a bunch of fun things along the way, too.
She says you don't want to miss a great day in the country full of the sights, tastes, and sounds of Hancock County's rural heritage. Get more on the historic barn tour and this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
All Plus, the NFL's opening weekend, of course. New data from the American Gaming Association shows, to the surprise of absolutely no one, that a record amount of money is going to be wagered this season. Also happens that September is Responsible Gaming Education Month, campaign to promote betting literacy and consumer education. So joining us this morning is American Gaming Association President Bill Miller. When we say record amount of money is going to be wagered this season, what does that mean? Attach a number, some numbers to this for us, Bill.
Well, first of all, I would be happy to do that. Thanks for having me on the show. Our survey indicates that $35 billion will be wagered in the NFL this season. And that's up from what was a record last year, which was $26 billion. And so it's a combination of things. It's increased number of jurisdictions around the country that offer legal sports betting. Mm-hmm. And then two, it is, you know, a further acceptance of sports betting as a mainstream entertainment dynamic. And so those are really the two principal reasons why we're seeing, you know, increased numbers. It's, you know, increased acceptance. People understand it's a fun alternative to doing something else, and that it helps enhance the sports bet, the sports fans' experience.
Yeah. Again, this is not a surprise. But you kind of touched on this, and I was going to ask, what are kind of the latest trends in the way consumers are engaging with these various sports betting platforms?
Well, I think that where people are really beginning to feel more confident and curious is in the non-traditional sports betting bet. So if you think about, you know, the old ways in which you would bet on sports would have been, you know, the Bears are favored by 6, and you either take them or take the over under.
Right.
So the number of bets was a pretty limited universe because of technology and because of player performance statistics and the ability to get all of that stuff in real time. The menu of options for sports bets has increased. And so I think that from the fans' perspective, it's a little bit less static than it used to be. And that's something that from a trend perspective, we're seeing a lot of.
It's also a way to keep things fresh. I mean, sure, like you said, the old way of wagering on a game is great, but it can get stale after a while. This is a way to kind of keep things fresh because literally every game is different. So as we mentioned, this is also Responsible Gaming Education Month. Talk a little bit about what that means.
The month of September is an opportunity for us to showcase new partnerships, showcase what our collective members in the industry are doing to help make sure that that we put the consumer first. And that's really been the hallmark of this industry since it began. And we continue that into the areas of sports betting. And so what you'll see is highlighted dynamics of different things that our member companies are doing in enhancing and advancing responsible gaming. And so if you wanted to go to and see some of that, responsible gaming responsiblegaming.org is one of those areas. But the American Gaming Association has a tremendous amount of resources and all about the licensed gaming industry, and that's AmericanGaming.org.
You have something you have dubbed the Have a Game Plan campaign for Responsible Gaming Education Month and really for the entire season. Talk a little bit about this campaign.
I would love to. Thank you for asking about this. So when the Supreme Court ruled back in May of 2018 that the states could make determinations about whether or not they wanted to have sports betting, we recognized that while our industry, the sports betting industry, the sports books, if you will, we all understood what betting responsibly, making sure that responsible betting is core to who we are as a business. We also recognized that now we have leagues, teams, arenas, stadiums, broadcasters who all have a financial interest in the sports betting ecosystem, and we wanted to give them the tools for them to make sure that they shared in that responsibility. And so when you think about having a game plan, and again, the website on that is haveagameplan.org. If you think about having a game plan as it relates to sports betting, whether you're a novice or an experienced bettor, it really always boils down to four things. One is making sure that you have a budget, you set a budget, and you stick to that budget. This is not a way to make a living. It's not a way to supplement your day job. This is entertainment. And I think that the reason that we have become so popular is because the American public understands that it's entertainment. But then importantly, it's supposed to be social, right? This is something to be enjoyed with your colleagues at work, your friends, your family. And then third, that you really know the terminology and you know the odds. And as we just talked about a couple of minutes ago, sports betting used to be very static and very simple. It was, you know, take the favorite, take the underdog. What's the over-under? And that was really the extent of the sports bet. Now it's proposition bets, it's players, it's parlays, mm-hmm. and there are a number of different things that are all really, really exciting, but also really important for the sports bettor to become educated about those before making the bets. And then finally, and most importantly, it's betting with a legal license to operate. And why that's so important is there are lots of things on the internet that look just like a legal sports book. But the reality is they are offshore online websites that take your personal data. They take your personal information. You don't know what they're going to do with that information.
Right.
And then importantly, if you win, you may not be paid. And if they're based in Curacao or Venezuela or someplace around the world, where are you going to go to get your money back?
Yeah.
You don't have the access to the courts or the legal system or the legal regulated the government that we work with every day.
Yeah. So for the millions of Americans who are going to be getting into the action this NFL season beginning this weekend, and again, as we were saying, wagering a record amount of money on these games and so on, how can they bet responsibly? If you had one piece of advice, boil it down to the one most important thing, what would that be?
I think the most important thing is know your limit. Know what you can afford to spend. In the same way that you would, you know, allocate entertainment dollars to a concert or a theater or some other thing, think about it in the same way. This is not an investment. You're not putting money into a particular game with the belief that this is going to be a way to, you know, buy some new thing that, you know, you and your family need. This is entertainment. And I think that if you frame it in, this should come out of my discretionary entertainment budget, then you'll never be in a bad place. And I think that, you know, again, making it social, making sure that you understand what it is you're betting, what are the terms, what are the actual bets you're making, and then making sure that you're betting with a licensed operator. I think those are the four takeaways and that will make sure that your betting experience is a good one.
Again, Bill Miller is president of the American Gaming Association. Real quickly, mention the website again where folks can get more information.
To learn more about our PSA campaign, it's haveagameplan.org. And to learn more about the legal regulated marketplace in America, you can go to americangaming.org.
Bill, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Putting the Findlay-Hancock County Chamber and the Findlay Young Professionals in the spotlight this morning with a big event that they have coming up on Saturday, right?
Yes.
Michelle Ladd is with us. Talk about the Touchdown Tailgate, which is basically a big giant tailgate party, right?
Correct, yes.
So tell us about this.
So it is in partnership with the Community Foundation.
Yeah, it's another one of their Fun for All events.
They're Fun for All. All ages are invited. We'll be downtown on East Crawford Street. We'll have tailgate games, face painting, DJ food trucks, and we'll also be streaming the Texas-Michigan game.
Okay, so this is happening from when to when on Saturday?
11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
All right, and again, everybody is welcome to come out and take part and just have a real good time. Weather should be great for it,
yes.
So
Looking forward to all of that. Talk a little bit about the Findlay Young Professionals. This is an opportunity to sort of learn, you know, more about what FYP is all about.
Yeah, so we're a local organization. Our members range from age 19 to 40. Our pillars are connect, impact, and lead. So we try to aim all of our programming and events based on those three things. So we'll do volunteer events, kind of networking events. We'll tour local businesses, hear from local CEOs, really just try to get young professionals involved in the community. And if they're new, to learn about the community.
It's a great way of building that next generation of professionals, business leaders, and community leaders as well.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So let's see here. Touchdown Tailgate. Tell us about some of the specifics here. You mentioned that you're streaming the Michigan game, so we'll have someone to root against. just kidding for all of you Michigan fans. Michigan and Texas is going to be obviously one of the highlights of the weekend, but you'll have food and all of that too?
Yep, we'll have some food trucks. We've got Johnny Burritos, Not Your Mama's Mac and Cheese.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yep.
That is good stuff right there.
So some good food trucks. We'll have a DJ, face painting, a coloring station for the kids. And like I said, the tailgate games, cornhole. We've got giant Jenga. Just all kinds of offerings.
It is going to be a terrific event for everyone downtown as part of the Touchdown Tailgate event. And again, it is Saturday from when to when?
11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Right there on Crawford Street.
East Crawford, yeah.
Okay, very good. We will check it out. Again, Michelle Ladd, the Findlay Hancock County Chamber and Findlay Young Professionals, their Touchdown Tailgate event on Saturday. Michelle, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
Your football Friday night forecast, the rain should be done by game time. Be left with cloudy skies and 70 degrees at kickoff, mid-60s, or upper 60s rather at halftime, low to mid-60s by the end of the game tonight. So perfect football weather. And although it has not been the start to the Trojans had hoped for, they will try to get their first win of the season against undefeated Sylvania Southview at Donnell Stadium tonight. Earlier this week, Coach's Corner host John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Stephen Adams.
It was a long night. Lots of passing. The game took over 3 hours. It was hot. It was humid. In the end, what do you feel like the takeaway is from the Week 2 loss?
There's no such thing as a good loss, right? We had opportunities to close it out the game, and, you know, there's no excuses. Young, you know, inexperienced at spots. We had opportunities, and at this point in time, we wanted to be able to capitalize on those opportunities, and we didn't. And some sloppy play in there, you know, there's no finger pointing at all. If there is, it all comes back to me. I thought we were better prepared than what we showed. There is some growing pains that come along with trying to reestablish an identity after week one, losing your quarterback. But then after week two, realizing that, like, that's not maybe who we are and trying to find our stride there. So excited about the challenge of figuring it out.
One big bright spot, Sean Hines running the ball for nearly 200 yards and a couple of touchdowns. That says good things about him as well as the offensive line, as you can't rack up that kind of numbers without some holes to run through.
Well, let's start with the offensive line. I think this is a group last year that was kind of maybe a group of uncertainty. Then coming into the season, there were a group that we were pretty sure about because of the experience they had over the last year. So we knew we were going to be able to lean on them, you know, moving forward even more, you know, after losing your quarterback. So big hats off to them. And then big hats off to both backs. I thought, obviously, Sonny showed what I've kind of known about him since he's been in grade school. I knew he could do it, and I thought Griffin Lane did a really, really good job as well. I told him, we talked about it, I think you probably played your best game. Maybe your yardage didn't look like Sonny's, right? But you still had a phenomenal game. You had positive forward movement. I thought his pass protection a couple times was really good. So it's some of those unselfish things that people don't see. So I'm really happy with that room right now, and I think we're growing even more with that group.
Riley Korkos, the sophomore, and Landon Eckelberry, a freshman, each saw significant time at quarterback.
Yeah.
What do you see in those young men as the season moves along?
Riley's got the knowledge base and got the quarterback moxie and the arm right now to be able to run our offense. You know, Landon's got a little bit of the legs and a little bit of the strength to be able to break tackles and provide something different with the run game and what he can do in a run game. two different guys, two different skill sets, but pretty unique at the same time.
This week, you get right back into it with the Northern Lakes League cross-divisional game when you meet Sylvania Southview. The Cougars come into Donnell on Friday night with a 2-0 record, yep, with the wins of 42-0 over Northview and 41-6 last week over Wake. Neither opponent has been able to stop their defense over the first couple of weeks. And so what are your keys for the defense to slow them down?
We have to be extremely physical. I mean, that's what it comes down to. We got to be violent on defense up front. Our defensive line needs to glow the way that I know they're capable of doing. Our linebackers got to be able to fill. This is a team that wants to establish the run. They're pretty consistent in their identity. They haven't shifted that from year to year. They want to run the ball. Their quarterback is really good at being able to manage the game, get the ball in their playmakers' hands, not going to make a lot of mistakes. They're not going to beat themselves. But we have to be able to stop what they feel is the soul of their team, and that's on offense, them running the ball. And I think our defense is excited for the challenge.
And your offense has done some good work despite a pair of losses. Do you stay the course and do what you've been doing and set up this new identity?
Yeah, I think we just kind of keep leaning into what the kids' skill sets are. You know, keep leaning into our offensive line, whether that's passing or running. Lean on those guys to be able to get the job done. And, you know, keep learning what our kids can do well. I think we have a decent idea. Obviously, practice presents a lot of, you know, good, bad, and things you want to tweak and change. But by this time of the week, you know, we feel going into tomorrow, we should be pretty sharp, and we could have a good idea of what our kids can do well. And it's just going to be a matter of us going out there and executing and keeping it super simple.
It'll be a tall task. Trojans at 0-2, Southview at 2-0. Showdown at Donnell Stadium tonight. Our coverage begins with tonight in high school football at 6:10 here on WFIN. Other coverage tonight across our family of station includes Liberty Benton is at Macomb. That's always a great matchup. And that one on 100.5 WKXA tonight and at WKXA.com. And Ottawa Glandorf travels to Wapakoneta on 106.3 The Fox and 106.3 The Fox.com. You can follow all the area action on the WFIN scoreboard page, updated in real time all evening long, powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College. Go to goodmornings.net for the link to our scoreboard page. A lot of great action around the area. Pandora Gilboa is at Van Buren. Arlington is at Ada. Riverdale faces off against our Arcadia. Lipsick will host Elmwood tonight, and Arlington travels to Bluffton in what should also be a good game. Again, you can go to the scoreboard page for updates throughout the evening.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
This seems like an exceedingly bad idea. Two men in Windsor, Ontario, reportedly picked up a bear cub and took him on a road trip to Taco Bell. Miriam Armstrong of the local Pet and Wildlife Rescue Center there outside of Windsor said her group took in the bear cub after police discovered it in the back of a van. So they took it on a road trip to Taco Bell and then just left it in the van, apparently. Just common sense to start, you know, they're wild animals, so maybe just leave them in the wild, said Ms. Armstrong. And a bear, obviously, there is some risk associated with housing a bear. She is a champion of understatement. There is some risk associated with housing a bear. Now, it was just cub. But still, Ms. Armstrong said the bear was not injured, but lethargic and stressed. And, she added, I'm sure his innards weren't feeling so great either. Well, if he had just been to Taco Bell, I can imagine not. I mean, that's... My innards aren't too... often aren't too well after a visit to Taco Bell, so I can imagine the bear probably felt much the same way. Elsewhere, in the broken news... here's another case of people trying to use the internet as an excuse for bad behavior. Two robbery suspects in Kentucky have made an unusual move. They did it for YouTube, so they claim. A 22-year-old Corey Reyes and 23-year-old Yahim Mullins have been arrested, accused of robbing a University of Kentucky student at gunpoint. However, The men have reportedly said it was a prank for social media. Yeah. What you find is that the cops generally do not have a great sense of humor about such things. Both men are now facing charges. Police say there was a bullet in the chamber of the weapon that they used in the robbery. So, not sure that they're buying that, oh, it was just a prank, just a stunt for social media excuse. Not gonna work. Not gonna work. This, you may find some poetic justice in this, I don't know. But a popular upscale mall in San Diego is recovering from a flood. The University Town Center, brown water and sludge spilled across the property in front of fancy brands like Tiffany & Company, Lululemon, and Warby Parker. Upscale mall, all of these high-end stores being inundated with brown water and sludge. In a statement, the mall's operator says a water main failure is to blame for the flood, but I don't know, that sounds more like a sewer line failure to me, you know what I mean? That's not what they're saying, but that's certainly what it sounds like. Not the upscale shopping experience that they had hoped for. You know, if you've flown at all in the past two or three decades, you know that smoking is not allowed in flight. There was a time when you could light up on an airplane, but that hasn't been the case for, 40 years or more. And now with the advent of e-cigarettes, that does include vaping. You cannot vape on a plane. But one passenger on an American Airlines flight from Milwaukee to Texas apparently did not get the memo. And that became a huge inconvenience for his fellow travelers. The report is that on this American Airlines flight from Milwaukee to Texas was forced to make an emergency landing in Oklahoma on Tuesday after a passenger refused to stop vaping on the plane. The passenger was given a warning by flight attendants after he was witnessed vaping, with the attendant telling him that it was a violation of federal regulations. He did not take it well and claimed that the flight attendant was making false accusations against him. He then chased after the attendant down the aisle of the airplane before other passengers jumped in and came to the airline staff's aid. The whole incident prompted pilots to divert to Tulsa so that the vaping passenger could be removed. The plane eventually got back in the air, landed at Dallas-Fort Worth about an hour after the planned arrival time. That is just, I mean, Milwaukee to Dallas, that's what, maybe a couple, 3 hours? You can't survive for a couple, 3 hours without your vape pen? Please. Yeah. And lastly, the broken news this morning, a letter in the, now this is something that you wouldn't ordinarily find in the digest of the broken news, because it comes from a legitimate scientific resource, but it is so odd that I felt we had to include it in the broken news. A letter published in the American Journal of Medical Science calls for more research to be done on the link between, are you ready for this? Nose picking and Alzheimer's disease. The American Journal of the Medical Sciences is calling for more research on the link between nose picking and Alzheimer's. The letter says that several pathogens that enter the brain through the nose have been linked to dementia. And so, the authors of the letter say, quote, we propose more investigation to understand the association of nose picking with Alzheimer's disease in the form of case control studies with larger sample populations, unquote. Now, there are a number of common diseases, relatively common diseases that are believed to perhaps have a link to Alzheimer's, the herpes virus, coronavirus, and there are many more. And Alzheimer's is obviously very serious, affects nearly 7 million Americans over the age of 65. So perhaps they have a point that we need to study the link between nose picking and Alzheimer's. But can't you imagine? I mean, just logically, you look at this. If you want to do a scientifically controlled study, the first thing you're going to have to do is find enough people willing to participate, willing to admit that they are, in fact, nose pickers. You know, that to me is going to be the most challenging part of that kind of research study. Don't you think? Don't you figure? There you go. Who's going to stand up and say, oh, I pick my nose? Put me in that study. Well, I guess it depends on how much you pay. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Parents, now's the time to give your kids a lesson in school bus and pedestrian safety. Teach your children these tips to keep them safe. When getting off a bus, look both ways before crossing. Before crossing the street, take 5 giant steps out from the front of the bus, make eye contact with the driver, and wait for the driver to signal it's safe to cross. And tell kids to stand back from the road when waiting for the bus. This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Do you have a dog at home? Every family should have a dog. Americans certainly love our furry companions. They are man's best friend for a reason. It's often said that we don't deserve dogs. But you know what? In most families, dogs have it better than we do. According to a new survey of 2,000 dog owners, 7 out of 10 respondents, 7 out of 10 say they look after their pets' health and happiness more than their own. It's more important that the pets are healthy and happy even than we are. 73% of dog owners make sure that their pooches get more exercise than they do. And what's more, the dog owners say that if they had a medical issue, they would take as many as 8 days to see a doctor. I mean, if you or I had a medical issue as a dog owner, if we had a medical issue, it'd take as many as 8 days to go and actually see a doctor. But it would take only 3 days on average to call a vet if something was wrong with the dog. This is how dedicated we are to our animals. For the record, Forbes says essential dog expenses cost an average of $1,533 annually. $1,533 on the essentials. So regular vet checkups, food, you know, those kind of things. Not your doggy Halloween costume. They're just the essentials. Compared to cat owners, by the way, those with men's best friend at home spend the most on vet care, an average of $367 per year, plus $339 on food and nearly $100 a year on grooming. So that's dogs, and it's a lot higher for cats. While all this may seem extreme, if you are a pet owner, chances are you get it. Forbes Advisor data shows 65.1 million U.S. households have a dog. So there you go. Some interesting numbers about the way we care for our pets and really pamper them even more so than ourselves. That part about the fact that we would wait 8 days to see the doctor ourselves, but only 3 days before calling the vet for an issue with our pet. That really says something, I think. Once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. These have, at least the last one here, certainly has a an autumn kind of feel to
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, we're getting into the more warm, yummy type stuff.
Yeah, there's... stick to your ribs kind of warm comfort food kind of autumn recipes. Not there yet.
No, but we're getting close.
We're getting close.
So I was like, why not?
All right. Very good. So this morning, we're going to start with a recipe for bacon baked spaghetti.
Yes. So this is 4 cups of milk, 1 can, 10.5 ounce of cream of mushroom soup, 8 ounce container of chive an onion flavored cream cheese, salt and pepper to taste, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/4 teaspoon of onion powder, 1 pound of uncooked spaghetti broken in half, 1 pound of bacon cooked and crumbled divided, and 4 cups of shredded mozzarella cheese, and you're going to divide that one also. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. To a large pot, add the milk, the soup, the cream cheese, the salt, the pepper, the garlic powder, and the onion powder.
Mm-hmm.
Heat that all over medium-high heat, stirring often until the mixture comes to a boil and the cream cheese is melted into the sauce. So no clumps of cream cheese. So make sure that's all nice and smooth.
Right.
Add the uncooked spaghetti. Reduce the heat to medium and cook for about 8 minutes, stirring often. Add about 3/4 of the bacon, reserve the rest to sprinkle on top, and 2 cups of your mozzarella cheese, and stir that well. Then pour the spaghetti mixture into a greased 9x13-inch baking dish. Sprinkle with the remaining mozzarella cheese and bacon. Bake at 350 degrees for 20 minutes until the cheese is melted. Let it cool slightly and enjoy.
Okay, so a couple of notes here just to underscore this. You're adding in the spaghetti uncooked. You're not cooking the spaghetti separately. It's going to cook while you are baking it.
Yes.
So you don't
while
have to worry about
it. And while you're baking it, it's good to go.
So you don't have to worry about cooking the spaghetti.
And I would use either angel pasta, or
that angel hair stuff, the
angel
real thin
hair pasta, or the thin spaghetti.
Yeah, okay, so
and I usually use thin spaghetti.
Okay, all right. So the bacon baked spaghetti. See, bacon makes everything better. Even spaghetti.
Yes.
Even spaghetti made better by bacon. To go along with that, we have a creamy grape salad.
Yes. So this is 2 pounds of grapes, green, red, or mixed, and then cold from the refrigerator is recommended, but it doesn't have to be. 4 ounces of cream cheese softened, 1/2 cup of sour cream, 2 tablespoons of granulated sugar to taste, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 3 tablespoons of light brown sugar, and 3 tablespoons of chopped pecans. And the pecans are optional also if you've got somebody with an allergy.
Okay. Yeah. Good good point. Yeah. They are not essential to the recipe. You can use either pecans or pecans.
Yes.
Okay. Either one. So it's up to you, depending on which one you prefer.
Sorry.
No, it doesn't really matter. I literally mean either one, whichever you prefer, because I mean, I don't know that there is a right way or a wrong way to say that.
Okay.
I'll get flamed for that, somebody will disagree with me on that.
So wash your grapes, pat dry, cut into half, and place in a large bowl. In a mixing bowl, beat together your cream cheese, your sour cream, your granulated sugar, your vanilla until smooth. Pour that mixture over the grapes and combine. Then in a small bowl, combine your brown sugar and your chopped pecans. Sprinkle that evenly over your grapes and loosely cover and chill in the refrigerator for 1 to 2 hours and serve cold.
Very easy.
Yes.
Very,
very easy.
Very easy.
Yes.
So you can do that while you are baking your bacon baked spaghetti.
Yes. Yep.
There you go.
Get that ready to go.
And then for dessert, and this is kind of the fall recipe. I guess what? Grapes are in season now, right? This is the grape season, so that's kind of an in-season thing.
Yep.
But we're definitely coming up on pumpkin season.
Yes.
And
I had my first pumpkin coffee this past weekend.
It's already started.
I know. It's so good, though.
The pumpkin coffee cake.
Yes. So for the streusel crumb topping, you'll need a quarter cup of all-purpose flour, quarter cup of light brown sugar, one tablespoon of cinnamon, and four tablespoons of cold butter, about a quarter cup. For the coffee cake, you will need 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 2 teaspoons of cinnamon, 2 teaspoons of pumpkin pie spice, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 cup of canned pumpkin, and that's the canned pumpkin, not the pumpkin pie. That's like the always the big thing. Don't get the canned pumpkin pie. Get the canned pumpkin puree.
Okay. Pumpkin puree, pumpkin not the pumpkin pie filling.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So 1/2 cup of
vegetables. How are they different? I'm sorry. How are they different?
A pumpkin puree is just pure pumpkin puree. That's all it is. Where
the pumpkin pie they add the spices. Other
stuff and the milk and gotcha. All that stuff to make a pumpkin pie and bake it.
So you just want the puree.
Correct.
All right. Yes. Very good.
So 1/2 cup of vegetable oil, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 1/4 cup of milk, and 1/4 cup of maple syrup. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Spray a 9 by 9 square baking dish with cooking spray. In a large bowl, mix the flour, the baking powder, the salt, the cinnamon, and the pumpkin pie spice together until well combined. In a separate medium bowl, mix the pumpkin, the brown sugar, the oil, the maple syrup, and milk together and mix that well. Pour the wet ingredients into the dry ingredients and stir until combined, but don't overmix it. You don't need to. If there's some lumps, that's fine. Pour the batter into your baking pan, spread evenly in the pan. Then in a small bowl, mix the crumb topping ingredients. So that's your 1/4 cup of all-purpose flour, your light brown sugar, your cinnamon, and your butter. And then you're going to mix that. It's going to be like a crumb topping. You're going to press it with a fork. Make sure it's a good crummy consistency. Sprinkle the crumbs on top of your batter. Bake for about 35 minutes or until the toothpick inserted in the center comes out mostly clean. Mm-hmm. Bake for another 5 minutes if the toothpick is mostly wet.
Okay, so you're going to go like at five-minute intervals after that. Okay, a couple of things to note. Again, not to belabor the point of the pumpkin puree versus the pumpkin pie.
Right.
The recipe does actually call, as you noted, for pumpkin pie spice.
Right.
So that's don't get those two confused.
Right.
So you got the pumpkin pie spice, and then you've got the pumpkin puree, not the pumpkin pie filling.
Yeah, pumpkin spice, pumpkin pie spice. And if you don't have pumpkin pie spice, you can use allspice. Or if you have like your clove and your nutmeg and cinnamon and all that stuff,
you can kind of create your own.
Create your own also.
The other thing that you mentioned about not over mixing the coffee, because you note here that if you over mix it, it actually comes out denser.
Yeah.
And I would have thought if you over mix it, it would the opposite would happen. If you under mix it, it would be denser, but it's the opposite. If you over mix it, it becomes more dense, and you don't want that in the coffee cake. Nope. So just again to highlight.
If you have a few lumps, it's no big deal. Okay. It's fine.
Yeah. Unlike the bacon baked spaghetti, where you want to make sure that that's all
mixed. Yes, with your cream cheese is all nice and soft.
Don't want lumps there.
No.
Not a big problem in the pumpkin
coffee. I don't think it'd be a big deal anyways, but.
All right, there you go. The recipes for bacon baked spaghetti, the creamy grape salad, and pumpkin coffee cake are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, are they not?
Yes, they are.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. Make sure that you follow her there. We also have the link up at goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, barely a week after Labor Day, and Bankrate is already out with their spending forecast for the holiday season. Be here before you know it, but will it be a green Christmas for retailers this year? So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.